Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the 2009 Zack Snyder film Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Eric Nash.
And I'm Dante from Let's Get Contextual podcast.
Welcome, Dante.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure.
Glad to have you. This is minute 139, which starts with a large man admitting to hiring Roy Chess to assassinate Adrian Veidt and ends with Night Owl questioning a Knottop about Hollis Mason. We've talked a little bit about, you know, this large man played by Mark Atchison, and here we have him talking about knowing Roy Chess from the inside. And I'm glad that this, like, discussion between the large man and Rorschach doesn't turn into a big bar fight.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that they didn't, that they used the restraint, you know, because you have all the perfect ingredients. You know, you got a bar, you got some vigilantes, and then you've got a bunch of bar that seems to be full of, you know, scum.
General rabble.
Yeah. I'm glad that they didn't feel the need to, you know, they weren't itching for another fight scene or something, just, you know, the action scene every 5 minutes or whatever the kind of trope is. So I'm glad they kept it as just this intimate, you know, interrogation between Rorschach and this large man.
Yeah, and even just in later in the scene, the fact that nobody tries to interfere with Owlman,
Night Owl.
Night Owl. My apologies. No, apologies.
There is a Owlman.
Yes.
In comics. Yeah, yeah. But like, I also appreciate that in the same vein that nobody tries to stop him. Like, none of the Knottop's friends or anything like that.
Yeah. When it says something about Rorschach and Night Owl that they can walk into this bar and attack the largest guy in the bar, and then a few seconds later, like, they have this, their private little conversation, just the two of them, with their backs turned, you know, to everybody, and it just shows that people are afraid of them. For sure, you know, more so Rorschach than probably Night Owl at this point, but, you know, it's interesting that they can get away with whatever they want here, and people are basically backing away from them as much as they can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it helps build the world a little bit to say, almost the rabble's maybe used to it a bit. Because obviously, like, this world has been not saturated, but has had vigilantes in it for a long time. So potentially it's just kind of like a normal thing that happens. They're like, oh, well, Jimmy got beat up this week.
Yeah. 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 I think I mentioned, it might've been yesterday or the day before, that, you know, it might be a regular thing for these people to see Rorschach turn up in a bar just to shake down somebody for information, you know? So it might not be as, rare of a sight. You know, Night Owl certainly would be a rare sight since he hasn't been active for like 8 years or whatever it's been. So,
yeah.
And it's also, to me, I kind of feel like at least some of these guys are maybe on the little bit older side, so they would remember better. But then at the end of this minute, not talking so much about what then happens next minute, but at the end of this minute, the Knottop starting to, that little conversation starts to happen. And, you know, there's even one guy behind him to the left of what we see him. And they both seem on the younger side than a lot of these other people. And the Knottop, the whole Knottop gang kind of idea, I think, is on the younger side as well, in a sense.
Yeah.
You don't see too many old Knottops, it doesn't seem like. Although there is that one in the Mason beat up scene, you know, murder
John
scene.
Tench portrayed Knottop, who's like 45.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a small little touch, but I like that Rorschach says, "Told by whom?"
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, I know that too. Well, I double checked the grammar. I went and looked at it. because I've really been enjoying for the past few years listening over and over again to Weird Al's Word Crimes that has the line in it about not to who but to whom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for all his other Tarzan speak and so forth, he gets it right here.
Yeah,
he's not as cavemanish.
So that makes me wonder: is he in more control of his dialogue than he lets on? Is he just using that simplified speech for an effect?
I mean, potentially. Yeah. I feel like that adds a level of intimidation to him because you're not quite sure who he is under the mask, kind of. Because if he talks like anyone, he kind of could, I don't know. But like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's more kind of intimidating if he's just like talk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just kind of uses short words. Like he might not necessarily be a man. He could be some sort of beast or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something that the large man here says that always kind of confused me. It's just when he says my contact, Miss Slater, in the book, this guy says something to the effect that he passed envelopes from, you know, his boss to Roy Chess. And here he's saying that he hired Roy Chess, onto Pyramid on the orders of Janie Slater. Mm-hmm. But then I think by calling Miss Slater his contact, I think it makes her sound more involved in the hiring of Roy Chess to do harm to Adrian. But I think I figured out or finally came to understand that I think what he actually means is, you know, Janie at some point told this guy to hire Roy Chess and other, you know, former inmates as Pyramid employees. And then that's where Janie's involvement ends. And then and then later on, I think then this, you know, Roy Chess gets this, you know, I think again, this large man is still a go-between someone who is hiring him to be an assassin.
It's like there's another supervisor-ish.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
Know, she was just the hiring manager.
Right.
Whereas he really ends up working more directly for someone else. Who we never know.
I think it's just that word contact that usually I think has more negative connotations than, or at least has more implications, I think, in this type of situation.
It sounds like he's had more contact with his contact.
Yeah.
You know.
But I like the next bit of dialogue where that he says that she was real nice. You know, I like that he's, I don't know. I like finding out that she was nice to this ex-con. And, you know, because the last time we saw her was in a very, you know, dark and low, you know, place in her life. She was confronting Dr. Manhattan, and I don't know. It makes me, you know, I like knowing that at least for a little while in her life, you know, after being with Dr. Manhattan, that she was thought of as a nice lady.
Yeah, and I mean, she's not judgy. She's for ex-cons.
Yeah.
I also just love the continual crunching that happens.
Yeah, that was
keeps going.
Yeah,
I was just about ready to ask how many times did he crunch there. It's been like at least three, maybe four or more.
It's let me see. I counted them. It was two in the last minute, and then there are two in this minute. So four altogether. But yeah, the ones in this minute are really painful.
Yeah.
You can just hear it in his voice when he's saying, you know, God, please let go. I'm telling the truth. And then in that last one that Rorschach gives him, it's just like, man, you're a bastard, Rorschach.
How many crunches does it take to get to the inside this
the gooey center of a
guy's mind, large man's mind?
And there can't one, be that two, much.
Three, and fourth for good measure.
Yeah.
I was just wondering how many crunches it takes to get to the guy's bones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the ones in this minute almost sound like it could be like glass grating on bone. And oh. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a great bit of, good bit of Foley here.
Yeah, yeah. Foley's always really interesting.
Yeah. Then we have, kind of like I mentioned, Rorschach and Night Owl kind of talking about Janie Slater, Manhattan's old girlfriend. Adrian might help us find out who's underwriting Pyramid. And then Rorschach says, follow the money. It just feels a little exposition-y, just with the way they're like saying who Janie Slater is, reminding us that she's Manhattan's old girlfriend, and then saying that the next step is to go to Adrian, who might know something about Pyramid, and then kind of that the follow the money trope. I mean, that's that line or that idea is used in almost any kind of investigation or feels like, but just a tiny, tiny little minute just to kind of hammer home, like, okay, here's the mission. Here's what we're trying to do. It's not too in your face, but
It was very helpful as someone who's never seen the film.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I guess we haven't said yet that Dante's never watched the movie.
Yeah, I've read the comic book once, and I've been meaning to get around to the film, but it was very helpful as a reference point. Like, all right, this is what's happening.
Yeah, so I guess that makes total sense that it has a purpose. So
it's there for us.
Yeah, yeah.
For the specific minute guests that haven't seen the movie.
Yep. It's all been leading to this. I guess I won't be too hard on it then.
The origin for the phrase, I typed in Google origin, follow the money. It's what I was thinking-ish, roughly. It's in the screenplay for All the President's Men. It's not from the book that Bernstein and Woodward wrote.
Huh.
You know, between the actual events and the movie coming out, they wrote the book first, and then William Goldman, who recently passed, but apparently he's the originator of it.
Huh.
Quite possibly. So
didn't really show up anywhere before that. Huh.
It's not known to.
That's cool. So then they, Night Owl, Rorschach, they're kind of about to head out of this place when something on the TV catches Night Owl's attention.
Well, and I love the this is when the song Clint ends, and it has there's the sound effect, or I don't know if it's technically part of the score or not. Kind of what how I typed it is VWOOOP, whoop kind of sound. That kind of sound.
I didn't catch that
as a transition, because there is a little bit more of a score that does creep in pretty slowly. As well, but it cuts over. The main point is the little more exposition-y type stuff from the reporter on the TV.
You guys have anything on this news reporter, Tiffany Burns?
I think IMDb has something screwed up in it, but
oh yeah,
because that this is the actress's name.
Yes,
and she's really not. Her main job didn't seem to be an actress. She really was a reporter. I think we talked about at the very beginning of the show that sometimes happens.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That reporters are actually used as reporters.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they're not necessarily trying to play themselves or anything like that.
Mm. Yeah.
But there's this weird. I think this weird. There's other Tiffany Burns. It sure seems like, according to IMDb, and I think there was one credit in the one that's this is supposed to be, where it's really this. The only real credit by this other Tiffany Burns is that she directed a movie.
Yeah.
That was about her brother being murdered, or a murderer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really think that's wrong.
Actually, it's correct. She's
really?
Yeah, she has two completely separate IMDb listings. So Tiffany Burns, the actress, is here. She's in this. She's in an episode of like Battlestar Galactica. A couple other things. Supernatural. Yeah,
I mean, like I said, almost all reporters. There was one real reporter credit after this as well.
Yeah. But then And I don't know why she has two listings in IMDb, but it is the same person.
Wow.
And she's so she was a, you know, reporter, I think in Cleveland or Cincinnati, and then she quit that to start working on this this documentary about her brother.
Yeah, Mr. Big.
Yeah. She directed and produced this documentary called Mr. Big. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2007, and it's about her real life brother and the brother's friend who were sentenced to life in prison for murdering the friend's parents and mm-hmm. autistic sister in, I think, like 1994. And it was this, her being a reporter, you know, she, I guess, wanted to try to clear her brother's name. Yeah. And, you know, she maintains that he's innocent. And I guess, it's, the story is kind of weird. It's about, it involves the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and how they use this tactic. It's kind of an undercover sting sort of thing where they pose as like organized criminals, gangsters. They use the name Mr. Big, and they try to coerce people into admitting or confessing to unsolved murders, which they, you know, that's the idea, I guess, behind the documentary is that she's trying to prove that her brother confessed to a murder that he didn't commit. So I don't know. It sounds crazy. And then, you know, when I was looking into that stuff, I also found instances or comments that other people left about, like, kind of on the opposite side saying, you know, no, this guy is guilty and the whole family is terrible. And how dare she try to, you know, prove mm-hmm. him innocent. And just, you know, obviously I'm not, have no information either way. So it's just, I'm just going off of what I've read the last couple of days. So sounds crazy though.
Yeah. It's essentially pretty close, similar to Entrapment.
Right.
That is, yeah,
this news reporter has a crazy life.
yeah.
So this is where Night Owl Dan finds out that Hollis Mason is murdered, and
yeah,
you know, it's she in her reporting she mentions not tops, so he jumps the gun.
I liked his heavy breathing, like kind of his immediate just almost feral reaction.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciated that was just, like, automatically there, and it wasn't kind of like a build-up. It was just like, nope, he's pissed now. He just flipped the switch.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that as well. I'll save most of my notes on that stuff for tomorrow's minute, based on kind of what he does next, you know? But,
yeah,
I do like that a flip is definitely switched inside Night Owl here. So we've got the not top responding, basically talking about being a victim and asking about his civil rights. Mm-hmm. And this is Michael Adamthwaite, who is not someone I recognize, but he's done a ton of work over the years and really in a relatively short period of time. He's was born in 1981, so he's not much older than me, but his first acting job was in 1989. So he would have only been, you know, 8 years old and doing like a English voice dubbing for an anime. And then throughout the 90s and 2000s, he's got like credit after credit for voice work. A lot more, you know, English dubbing of anime series or whatever. And then some live action TV mixed in, and then a few movies here and there. He's
I'd kind of call him like a half Canadian right there.
Well, he's in Smallville, Stargate, right. And Supernatural.
Oh, Supernatural too. I missed Supernatural.
It's funny because I thought, oh, he didn't get all three. Yeah. But then if you scroll up, it lists Supernatural in his like 2018 credits. So it's much later in his, you know, IMDb, even though he's technically been in like two episodes. One was in 2012, but because I don't know why IMDb sometimes lists things based on the later date or whatever. So yeah, he is a Canadian regular. But
I mean, that's not that bad of a gig.
No,
like, you just get to be credited with like a bunch of different things.
Sure.
The Northern Hollywood, essentially, it seems like.
Yeah.
Let's see. You guys got anything else?
I mean, back to the civil rights thing. I thought it was amusing that he's just like, what about my civil rights? Like, he's going to fight him on like a, like, I mean, he just saw Rorschach break so many laws,
right?
But he's going to try to fight him using law.
That's fine. I didn't think about that.
I mean, you know, it's understanding the idea that these are vigilantes and not official law enforcement officers.
Yeah. Like, he's trying to treat them like they're cops or whatever. Thought that was amusing.
I kind of have a little bit of an issue with the way he says, I knew you were going to victimize me.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, it's just like, you know, he's talking in past tense about something that just happened in just a very small few seconds. Mm. I mean, he's referring to somehow something from when they walked in, you know, a minute ago.
And that's probably more likely.
That they were going to find something to
pin
on him.
Sure.
I just assumed that it was because he was a not top.
Right. I think well, that,
yeah, but yeah. I mean,
I that's probably what when he saw them walk in, and the two of them exchange like a look early, like in last minute, you know, so I think even as far back as, you know, 60 seconds ago, he got a bad feeling that he was next on these guys' list, you know, as far as people to talk to. So Dante, tell us about your history with Watchmen.
As I mentioned, I haven't seen the movie. I haven't meaning to. I've heard it's one of Zack Snyder's better films. I read the comic, I think early this year, or last year, sorry. This year is a new year. early last year, probably around like February or March. I took it slow though, which was a bad thing ultimately. I should have read it a little quicker. But I thought it was good. I need to reread it really to have kind of final thoughts. But I think it was good, and I really enjoyed the characters. And I read the first few issues of Doomsday Clock because of it.
Okay.
Which that might have prompted me to read it in the first place. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, it's very good, and it's you can kind of see the impact that it's had on culture and comics.
Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Have you heard about people's habits usually of rereading it?
Not particularly, no.
It's quite often people will talk about how they will give it a read like once a year and once every couple years ish. And I'm probably about once every 3 years myself, but
yeah. No, I can see that as having read it like about a year ago, just because like it is very complex in a lot of ways, and I feel like because of that it deserves a few readings. And I mean, a break probably makes sense, because if you don't give yourself a break, you're gonna kind of get tired of it. Mm-hmm. But I think it makes sense that roughly every year you kind of give it a reread, because it's you forget things, you pick up on new things, and it's kind of like a good refresher of a good story. I mean, it is an interesting story.
I've said a few times, you know, it's one that grows with you. You know, I would say maybe since it's early for you, having just read it, you know, maybe read it in 3 to 5 years, because it'll be a completely different movie, because you'll be, you know, 3 to 5 years older, and you'll come at it with a slightly different perspective. And then ultimately, then if you read it in another 5 years, it'll be even more different. That's just kind of my take on it. I mean, certainly there's nothing wrong with reading it every year, you know? But I kind of like that it changes slowly over time, or as you,
and you can slowly like you take your own worldview and perspective as you grow, but also you might start like understanding different characters more.
Oh, totally. And I think that's part of the book's longevity. I think that's why it's still relevant, is because it's still relevant to the time that you read it. You know, when you're young and you read it, you probably tend to, I think most people tend to be more into the Rorschach character and, you know, Dr. Manhattan. And then I think as you grow older, you sympathize a little bit more. Maybe start coming around on Ozymandias. Yeah, yeah. You know, I think you see characters differently depending on kind of where you're at. So,
yeah, I think it's short enough too that it's just kind of like, well, I'll just give this a read again, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like a 5-season series or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what can you tell us about Let's Get Contextual?
So that is my podcast that recently kind of had like a revamp as of the new year. Basically breaking out some new segments, which was good fun, and also a weekly Patreon episode that ties into the weekly episode. And basically we talk about, I'm the host, and I have one or two kind of regular guests that are basically co-hosts at this point, in Zach and Garrett. Both of them will be coming back soon, but I have a guest on each week and we talk about either, a movie, a TV show, a comic book. Yeah. Just kind of any media really. I think in a few weeks I'm going to be talking, I got to watch this YouTube video called Shrek Retold because Carlisle is forcing me into it. Yeah. So, but it's fun. It's just kind of a review of movies I have seen, and comics I have read. And then the second segment is like a little bit where we kind of break it, basically. So we talk about how much we love the movie, if we liked it. And then the second segment is like, how would you get from point A to point B of the film or comic or whatever in like 15 minutes? So
nice.
Just kind of like pointing out any flaws you see. But yeah, so it's good fun. I'd love to have, I think I'm planning to have you on soon, Travis.
Yep.
If and when I talk about Watchmen, you guys are welcome to come on.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where can everyone find that?
Oh yeah. It's on Twitter, Instagram, @ Let's Get Context, and Gmail as well. So
cool.
All the same. Try to keep it all.
Yeah.
The same.
Very cool. Well, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram @ Watchmen Minute. You can leave us a rating on iTunes that we'll share in a future episode.
And you can also visit facebook.com/ Watchmen Minute and like our page there. And come in and talk about some glass crunching in your hand at the Crime Busters Listener Society, our Facebook
group. Maybe if you know how that soundbite is made, like the Foley. That'd be interesting to know. I'm curious now.
Yeah. So why don't we come back tomorrow for minute 140? But until then, who watches the Watchmen?
We do.
Watchmen are over.